If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that came out this week, and we review them with our minds and our voices and our hearts.
We come to each episode as newborns, fully just ready to take on these works of art.
What are these comics, we ask?
What is this?
Are going to start with one of the easiest comics for new people to understand. TMNT X Godzilla number one from IDW, written by Tim Seeley, art by Pharaoh Pei. Now, I know you don't pronounce the X, but I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. It's crazy to me. It's a letter in there. Are we just going to stop? Are we going to do Ertles? Ertles Godzilla? I mean, like, come on, right?
Yeah, man, they've been trying to keep us down too long with what letters we have to say and not say. I'll say whatever letters I aunt, you know?
And that's my review of this comic book. No, Justin and I talked to Tim and Pharaoh back at New York Comic Con about this book. You can go back and listen to the interview. There's some very mild spoilers there, but like we talked about with them, one of the things I was really impressed with this book, other than the fact that Tim Seeley is a old master of the crossover, is Pharaoh Pei really gets across a sense of scale with this sort of thing. Like, I don't know. We were talking about this, frankly, with like one of the Marvel Godzilla crossovers, where I think it was Hulk fighting Godzilla, and it just, there was no background, so you couldn't actually tell they were large or anything like that. It just looked like two normal-sized dudes fighting. But here, this opens up with just like a mission statement of a couple of pages where you end with Godzilla looming over the Foot Clan and Splinter. So you see him tidy before he's pre-Giant Rat on a shoulder. And it's just a really cool regular rat who knows karate.
Who knows? Yeah, how much karate did he know at this point, you think, Pete?
And it's just very cool. Like, I think beyond all the mythology that he's laying in here, there's some really good art that gives us the sense of scale of Godzilla that we've been getting a lot of Godzilla comics, but it really comes through in this one.
And there's a sense of history, which I think really works here. I like the connection points are strong. It's really, really fun the way we see the turtles and the use of the animated show as sort of the origin story for this comic, I think, is awesome. But Pete, well, something I talked about with Tim especially was, do you think Shredder's really mad that he's fighting this giant rat when he was young, he knew Splinter as just a rat and he could have just like squeezed him a little? You know, and then ended the whole thing? Are there any rats that you know that you're like, fuck, I hope this isn't my future nemesis?
Yeah, are there any rats that you see being like, yeah, making like little punching?
Yeah.
Or Pete, gestures. Just so we're clear, rats are more of a New York City thing, like an urban setting. They live in the sewers, like your friends, the turtles. You live in the country. Are there any like squirrels or possums that are learning karate in your area?
Yeah, there's a ton. Yeah, this is an absolute blast of a comic. First off, great cover. I think this is just such an exciting mashup. You've got Tim Seeley at the helm here. Amazing art that really just kind of jumps out of the page at you. This to me is just such a fun, well-executed comic. It really does jump off from the cartoons, from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated series back in the day. You get Rocksteady and Bebop right out of the gate. You got Shredder and Krang. You got Godzilla in the mix. This is just an absolute blast. Each page was exciting and just I felt so well taken care of. So this comic is a nostalgia bath and a half and just so well executed. And, man, I love this comic.
Well, and I'll just throw out there, I know I mentioned at the beginning about Tim Seeley being an old master about this, but he comes up with a very neat conceit, which is that the Foot Clan was created to stop kaiju. And so that immediately...
Conceit.
And that brings them directly into conflict. It leads to the present day. It shows why the Turtles get involved. So it's not, this is another thing that we were talking to Tim about, but like, it's not the portal nonsense where like, oh, we have to explain why these two worlds come together. Much more interesting to hit the ground running.
Yeah, like in implied depth that is much deeper than you would expect for any of the crossover. But Pete, my question for you is, what do you think Godzilla is more vulnerable to? The hockey stick or the croquet mallet in Casey Jones's bag?
Time will tell, my friend. Time will tell.
Yeah. And Godzilla is, I believe, an iguana that learned karate, or is that what's his deal?
What's the canon there?
This is new. This is new for Godzilla to be in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles canon here. So I'm excited to find out with everybody else.
I almost feel like we're interviewing Pete here, but because he's such a text when it comes to TMNT. Pete, as someone who would sometimes see green ooze in the ground and contemplate rolling around in it to see if he could mutate. True story about Pete. Pete will not deny that. Have you started training any of your woodland friends in karate in hopes that they will eventually mutate and become your
father?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. It's a tricky slope when I run into animals in the wild. So, yeah, I'm a little worried about who's going to be my villain and who's going to be my master. You know.
Do you mean an actual slope, like in your backyard? Like there's a hill slope down to the valley that you live on.
And do you mean, when you say run into animals, do you mean physically bump into them? How are you Cinderella out in the woods? What's happening here? Are you getting dressed via bird?
I mean, that would explain a lot.
He's got bird clothes.
Why don't we move on and talk about Predator Badlands, number one, the novel written by Ethan Sachs, art by Elvin Chig. This is an official prequel to the film and a mild
spoiler. There's a movie, too? Oh, my God.
If you can believe it. Bafo B.O. this weekend for this movie, but... If you're not aware of it, if you haven't seen it, it follows a predator named Deck who is trying to win his cloak and the approval of his father. There's some stuff that goes on with his brother that I won't spoil at the beginning of the movie. But this takes it back in time and shows a bit of the relationship between Deck and his brother, Quay, I think it is. I don't remember. And an entirely different adventure. Pete, you seem pretty psyched about this, so take it away.
Yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised with this book. It was cool to kind of see Predator's life. And they got it rough, dude. Their fathers are cold as fuck, dude. Not very, open or willing to listen. They're just very brutal. So, man, it's got to be rough being brought up as a Predator. So, loved all the action.
Generational trauma from the Predator.
Yeah, and your father is a Predator as well, but like an actual animal Predator that...
Yeah, like a wolf.
I no longer like this bit. But, amazing art, tons of action. This was great.
I'm unsettled by the Predators constantly having their masks off. They should
unsettled?
I feel like we're seeing a lot of mouth. I feel like they should mask up.
You seen the movie? Have either of you guys seen the movie yet?
No. It's not even out yet.
On Friday, so I did see it over the course of the weekend in movie theaters.
Thought it was out this Friday.
Nope, you missed it.
Damn it, I missed it.
Yeah, you missed
it. It's gone.
No, it's gone. They took it away.
They took it out.
Anyway, I thought
I had to read the comic first, so now I'm ready.
For sure, yes. Yeah. I thought this was a great companion to the movie. It did actually illuminate more about the relationship between the brothers. I thought there was some fun, surprising action in here as well.
Yeah.
Solid art. This is a really good one-shot. And they worked with Dan Trachtenberg, the director of Prey, Predator Killer of Killers, and also Predator Badlands, to craft this story. He has a very fun note right at the beginning.
Yeah, so the note is awesome at the top.
Yeah, so if you like the movie, definitely check this out. Yes, Pete, you have a question.
Yeah, did you bring the comic to the movie theater? Or did you check like some of the background?
The comic wasn't out yet when I went to see the movie because the movie came out first, then they released the prequel comic.
That doesn't make any sense.
Are you slipping through time, Pete?
I'm going to bring my comic to the movie theater and just see if some of the backgrounds match up. You know what I mean? See if this really
The Predators aren't signing comics at the movie. They don't.
You never know who's there. They might surprise people in the audience.
That's right.
The hunt for the predators of the movie theater has begun. Batman 162 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Loeb, art by Jim Lee. Finally, after a huge delay, the next chapter of Hattush is here.
Isn't that huge of a delay? It feels like it's not that huge of a delay.
It was a pretty huge delay. I think this was supposed to come out originally. Well, the whole thing was supposed to be done by August. So it's a pretty huge delay, I would say, relatively speaking.
Okay.
Whatever it is supposedly going to be done in January or February, something like that. But here we're getting Batman versus the entire Bat family. And I got to tell you what, they do call him on it in this issue. And I should put a spoiler warning, should have put a spoiler warning for everything.
Yeah.
In case we end up talking about a specific plot point. One of the most messed up things any writer has ever had Batman do happens in this issue. And everybody's like, yo, Batman, you went too far. And he's like, I guess I did.
Well, and the other thing, you're talking about when, I mean, I will say when he just out of nowhere drugs Batgirl?
Yeah, and knocks her out, and they have her flashback to be like, oh my God, this is like when I was immobilized by the Joker in the Killing Joke.
And then it jumps right to Dick Grayson's family being killed. And the two things are crazy about that. Just the action is crazy, and then this whole... This issue is just messy. It's just so much happening without any of it really meaning much, I would argue. And it's just like everyone's like backflipping through. It's like watching a circus act where you're like, yeah, there's no story here. It's just people jumping around. But the other crazy part is we're inside Batman's head for all of this. And he's like, I got to just dose Batgirl. I was like, I'm not a part of this. I'm not with you, guy. This is not my Batman. He's like forcing me to take control. He's like, just the language is, it's not a fun.
Can I throw something out that occurred to me while I was reading this that might have made this, I don't know if work better necessarily, but come off a little easier for readers who are having a problem like me and Justin, Pete. I'm just going to jump ahead and assume you loved it because great Jim Lee art, Jim Lee classic art. But I think they should have released this as a Black Label graphic novel so that, first of all, it would have been done in one story. And second of all, setting it as a out of continuity thing versus right now, like we've talked about, it doesn't seem like Jeff Loeb is caring too much about the continuity that happened between Hush and Hattush. And certainly at this point, it's blown so far past it. All of the things they were going to follow up on from Hattush, it's no go at this point. It really doesn't matter. So instead, they've got another six issues coming after this. I think they should wait however many years it takes and just release it as a graphic novel. And people will be like, huh, interesting.
Huh. Well, first off, I thought this was a cool cover. I liked it was like a rip in the mask. You can kind of like see more than we usually do, which is kind of a fun way to start.
A sexy little eyeball.
I don't know about that, but it definitely is visually interesting. Batman being a just crazy, horrible version of this of himself, and this is rough on many levels, like you guys touched upon. Last panel is kind of a fun, interesting idea. So
it's a nice last panel.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I mean, I definitely get all of what you're saying, but I don't know, I just, the fact that we're doing this again, and it's, you know, great to see Jim Lee back on Batman, I guess I don't care, and I'm just so happy that it's back that I'm ignoring all the red flags because it's pretty. I don't know what to tell you, but it's, I'm so happy that this exists that... it's not upsetting me as much as it does you guys.
And the other thing is, like, I feel like Hush is like such a side character in this. I don't know what the plan is. It just feels like absolute chaos is happening, and Hush is just
Batman
there with
Batman being like, "My God, Hush, he's put all the pieces on the board. He's doing all this," and I'm like, "What is he doing? I don't know what he's doing."
The other thing is, he may not put all the pieces on the board by like having the Bat family all in one place. I was like, "That's the easiest thing to do in Gotham. Set off one alarm, and it's like, hey, five Robins are here. What do we do?"
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. And then Hush's whole plan is get them together and just shoot them with a sniper rifle. I was like, that's
I don't know.
Not diabolical.
You got to get them all to line up if you're only going to have
a sniper. He throws, like, 9 scalpels at hunters. I was like, throwing scalpels because he's a doctor? What is this?
That's what
is
a that doctor does. Have you ever been to a doctor?
Yeah, have you ever fought a doctor before? All they do is throw scalpels, bro.
Wait, you're not a doctor, are you? No! Another bar fight. I only fight dentists.
Why don't we move on and talk about Hellboy and the BPRD, the Ghost Ships of Labrador, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola and Rob Williams, art by Lawrence Campbell. I'll be honest with you, I was going to leave this out of the stack just because I feel like we have the same sort of conversation about Hellboy every time, but then I read it at this rocks. This book is great. It is a ghost story set at an island where a new BPRD agent disappears. Hellboy and Abe Sapien show up to investigate it. There's twists, there's turns. The art from Lawrence Campbell is awesome throughout. Yes. I love this issue.
This is the book we've been talking about wanting. We've been reading all of the Mike Mignola stuff and being like, all these stories are right next to Hellboy, and they have Hellboy vibes, but they're just never, like, the full Hellboy experience, and that's what this is. It's, like, classic era, Hellboy just out on a case. It seems fun. Like, this was a great read.
Yeah, this was a blast. It was great to get Hellboy back and kind of have some fun with Hellboy again. Yeah, love the character that disappeared, cool car.
The ship is a cool car?
Well, no, that's the thing that threw me out of it. The Jaws ghost ship moment threw me a little bit because
you're
talking
about the end of the issue?
Yeah. It's a shot. It's artistically done and a lot of fun, but it's a little too tongue-in-cheek for me where it's a ghost ship, but it's drawn to look like Jaws, and I'm just like, all right, Jaws ghost ship, okay. But I really thought this was a blast, and the art is amazing.
That was a sea monster at the end.
It's barking.
Yeah.
The ship. I think you're both right. It's a ship and a sea monster, I think.
Very cool.
It's got a mast. It's got a mast over the top.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots of sea animals have masts.
Yeah. Yes,
don't famous. Worry about it. I'm a sailor. Transformers, number 26 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Dan Mora. In this issue, more Transformers stuff is happening.
Kirkies!
This is the first full issue from this team. Last issue had Jorge Corona on it, and lots of stuff is actually going down here. We met Miles Mayhem for the mask part of the universe last issue. Yes. I thought they were going to spit it out for a while. Nope, he's just evil, and he's taking advantage of them. We also get a Decepticon who is maybe defecting to the side of the Autobots.
A Defecticon.
Defecticon, if you will. So big stuff going down. Justin, you're smiling. How are you feeling about this?
I am enjoying this better. This feels like there is now some plot engine going, and Optimus isn't just getting smashed. It feels like the story's emerged into a new place. So I am enjoying this more. And it's still holding true to the old animated feel with their base and all of that. I like the Defecticon moment and some of the mayhem. I think is a good villain to throw in here. Very capital V clear villain to have them fight. I do have a question: how the Energon works? Like in this comic, Optimus is like his windshield sort of messed up. He's got like loose wires. If they eat Energon, the windshield fixes?
No, it's their energy source. You know what I mean? So like if it takes energy to get fixed, you know what I mean? So like,
but like if they, so if he takes a sip of juice, Energon juice, his windshield, that's like healing and his windshield like fixes and his wires like tuck in.
It's kind of like you can use Energon to like, give me enough energy to fix this stuff and to kind of like give myself the upgrades that I need and that kind of thing. But I guess if you want to fast forward, it's a...
You can disagree with me or tell me.
Cool. It's just I feel like you're making fun of it a little bit.
Actually not. I was just curious. That's interesting. Like Energon is...
I agree with you. Seeing the Energon, they're not tubes. What are they like?
crystals. They were crystals.
Yeah,
crystals.
But they're sort of like shaped like rectangular. What is that?
Boxes. They were like boxes in the cartoon.
Yeah, they look like boxes. So I definitely was wondering this issue whether they eat them with their mouths or if they like push them on themselves and they're like bazoomph or what's going on there.
In the cartoon, that's how they did it. They kind of just like ate them with their bodies.
But back then it was sort of like putting in a disc.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
It was.
With these, it feels more like absorption or like they just suck it down like Coca-Cola.
We need, what I think we're saying is we need an issue where the Transformers eat Energon, like an entire issue.
Sure. Yeah. I think all the people who are fans of the Energon universe are clamoring for more Energon conversations.
Yes. I'd also love to see an issue where one of the G.I. Joes eats some Energon as well, being like, I don't know, that looks kind of good.
Very strong. Yeah, and then his arm fixes or whatever.
Yeah,
it is crazy. In this issue, the Decepticons are like, we heard about some Energon at the bottom of the ocean, and there's slightly less Energon than we thought. And I was like, uh-oh. It's like the amount of Energon conversation and the sort of relative scarcity is wild to me.
Yeah, it is funny because like this has all the hallmarks of a Robert Kirkman comic where just a bunch of things are happening all the time. There's a cliffhanger at the end where I'm like, cool, Megatron grabbed his head. Okay, I guess we'll find out.
Dude, it seems like a splitting headache, you know?
Yeah, but at the same time, like, they are taking more time to delve into some interesting dynamics, so I'm on board with this. Let's move on.
I didn't really get to talk, asshole.
Talked a lot. We asked you a lot of questions about how they eat Energon, and you barely answered our questions.
I didn't get to talk about this issue. First off, great cover. Always great to see Optimus Prime laying the smackdown, although it doesn't really happen in the ish, so it's a little misleading. But I liked what they did with Soundwave and also just kind of this idea of like, hey, over here, the boss doesn't abuse us and just yell at us and call us horrible names. And they seem nicer, so I'm going to stay here. So kind of cool. We didn't really see that at all dealt with in the animated series or anything. So I like this take. And I think it's kind of a cool, interesting thing to see how this is all going to kind of unfold. But this kind of allegiance and this kind of thing of questioning, like, why just because they're your people, like, what does that mean and all that kind of stuff. So it's going a little deeper than the normal Transformers, which I'm all about. But tons of great action and great, I almost said animation, but amazing art.
In your brain, you're imagining it. I did one more question. In the case of the Defecticon, does his Decepticon little tattoo, I guess, does it turn into an Autobot one now that he's a good guy?
Well, I don't know if it just transforms like that or if, eat some Energon to do it or what. But it'll
the Energon has to fix it.
Yeah.
You just rub Energon on there.
It's a cure-all, that Energon, I tell you what.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Definitely.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Moving on to 1776, number one for Marvel, written by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Sean Damian Hill. Now, there was a lot of heat on this series, not the positive heat, but the negative one when they announced it, because there's a lot of people who aren't feeling great about the old America right now, but Marvel don't care. They're getting the 250th party started early. And in this issue, Doctor Strange finds out about a magical attack happening on the beginning of the country, thanks to the spirit of Ben Franklin, and so puts together a ragtag team of heroes to head back in time and save America. I'll tell you what about this book, because there was like a lot of negativity about it online. Also, the fact that it was like, frankly, all Caucasian heroes going back in time, probably to get around certain issues in terms of the time period, but they don't address that. I will say that they went in a little harder on America than I thought they were going to here, which I thought was really interesting.
I agree.
is it Hulk being like, I don't know, should we? Is there anything to say the British would be worse?
Bruce Banner has an extended speech where he's like, let's just let the British win the Revolutionary War. And I'm like, what? That's a crazy idea. Bruce? I've never heard anyone across any political spectrum being like, I just wish the British won the Revolutionary War. And hero, Bruce Banner, one of the top 10 smartest people in Marvel Universe, is like, let's let them win. It's going to be fine. Canada's
so I will say there does seem to be some thought there in terms of like delving into lesser known parts of history, analyzing what the birth of America means rather than hooray America. But at the same time, I got to throw out there something that I just cannot get past with this is the comic is called 1776.
Yes.
And it's set in 1777.
I was like, crazy. Why?
I felt for sure when it started off with that at the beginning, I'd be like, okay, well, then they'll jump back a year. And they keep chironing it. They keep being like, nope, it's not. It's 1777.
I was like, just delete the chiron. Just don't
100%.
We'll assume it's 1776.
Yeah, revolutionary times. It's fine. We'll figure it out. Crazy. Yeah,
I agree that was very funny. And I would look, Captain America is going to be like Captain America. This is a big moment for him.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be Captain Britain after he thinks about what the Hulk had to say.
It's a great idea for a hero.
How'd you feel about this, Pete? You loving America right now?
Yeah, this didn't work for me. It just felt weird to read and didn't click.
Why is that? Any particular reason?
I think the things you were talking about before, for sure.
The 1777 thing that bothered you too.
Well, no, just the old-timey, like having modern heroes interact with old-timey kind of people, and it doesn't feel right, and it just doesn't fit in my brain for some reason, you know, just like, hey, Ben Franklin, oh, hi, Spider-Man, you know, so
they do lay out there that they have done this several times, like they have encountered the founding fathers several times throughout history, so it's not beyond the pale. But I do agree with you that, like, I don't know, it's a weird thing to be doing right now. That's all.
Yeah, and there's just a lot for me that it doesn't make sense in my brain.
All right, fair enough. Why don't we move on and talk about Batman Dark Patterns, number 12 from DC
cool
Comics.
Cool cover.
Written by Dan Waters, art by Hayden Sherman. This is the final issue of the series, which has been 4 3-issue mysteries that actually they attempt to bring together in this final issue and put under one umbrella. Justin, I'm curious to hear from you because that's something you've thrown out here for a while with this book, that they were going to bring it together in some way. So how do you feel about the resolution? Did it come together in a satisfying way for you?
Yeah, Justin.
I mean, I did like the way this ended. It wasn't trying too hard to be like, it's all actually one plan. It was just the character, the villain, happens to be had been driving this or witnessing these other things. So I think that it didn't feel like it was sort of too sweaty bringing it all together. I didn't quite understand. There's this idea that Batman is the fire of Gotham.
Yeah.
And he seems to be almost invulnerable to fire in this. And I thought that was interesting. Sort of a strange idea.
Yeah, but that was kind of a crazy... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, buddy.
I just said the art is beautiful.
I agree. Just breathtaking panels, and the fact that it's a giant fire as well. But also, like, the fact that there's a giant fire and Batman's just standing there fighting and breathing like nothing's going on. Like, even the villain has to wear, like, all the shit just to be able to maintain oxygen. So, like throw a little mask on Batman so I can enjoy the fight. But it was just so, like... And then the fact of, like, he was on top of the building was just kind of like, and everybody's like, he controls fire. He put out his hand and the fire stopped. I was a little like, what are we doing here? But all that aside, really an epic story. I love this. I thought it was great. The ending was fantastic. The panels in the fire were just so beautiful and amazing. really felt like such a cool Batman story. I loved artistically how it kind of leaned that way. So, yeah, super impressed with this overall. I thought it was a great, great run.
I do think there's an argument to be made that a lot of this is happening in Batman's head, or partially because he is dealing with a fever at the current time. But I think that gets mixed by the fact that he's not the one or the only one we're focusing on the perspective of in this issue. So I agree with you guys that that was a little bit confusing when what has otherwise been an absolutely fantastic series. But definitely pick this up if you didn't read it. It's great. It's beautiful.
Really enjoyed it.
I really think this is going to be talked about as one of the best Batman runs of all time. Ooh, so
of all time. Bold. Of all time.
I think it's going to be one of those things that, like, when it gets collected in a compact comic 5-10 years from now, people are like, oh, man, I love that story. So I think people will remember it for a really long time. Moving on to Medieval, number one from Comixology, written by Neil Klein, art by Alex Cormack. This is a riff on Mark Twain's Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, where it's a Yankees fan who gets hit with a baseball and sent back in time. And his first orders of business are, of course, getting plumbing and also teaching people to play baseball when he gets back there. There's a little more going on in the issue, but it's violent, it's profane. Pete, I imagine this is what you would do if you went back in time. So what did you think?
Yeah, this really did hit home for me. Nice. Thank you. Yeah, I think this is a fun way to kind of do the old timey back in town thing, where it's like, instead of getting somebody who might be a hero, like, let's just grab a fucking goon and see how he handles it. And so or a regular Yankee fan, sure. But someone really did the research, because not only did they pick a Yankee fan, they also have him rocking number 21, which, if you are a Yankee fan, you know that's the Warrior, Paul O'Neill, which I thought was a really good choice for this character, to kind of have someone go back in time and fight and that kind of stuff. So I just thought that was so cool. And, yeah, I felt like this was a silly blast and a great idea, where it's like, yeah, have someone go back in time. It's like, I'm going to fuck you up with this baseball bat. You know, so, yeah, I love this. I absolutely love this.
Yeah, I enjoyed this, too. Like, it's really, it feels like a fun, lighthearted idea at the beginning. And it's like, oh, and then he's like sort of a, like a Danny McBride type, who's like just getting drunk back in the past. And then he gets into a fight, and it's so violent, which I was shocked by, but it really made the violence very palpable, because it caught me off guard. And I thought the fight was really well done. I like the twist at the end of the issue. Like, this was a fun read.
Quick question for you guys. When you read this concept, what did you think it was analogous to? Did you think it was analogous to a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, the Mark Twain book, a kid in King Arthur's Court, the Disney movie, or whatever the Martin Lawrence movie was called?
That's what I was thinking, the Martin Lawrence movie.
I remember the Martin Lawrence.
Yeah, the Martin Lawrence movie. What was it? It's not A Knight's Tale. It's something.
It's funny, because which one of those have I consumed most recently? Definitely the Martin Lawrence one. So, yeah. That was on a TV in a bar or something. Black Knight, I believe it was called.
Yes, that's it. Great. Three classics, equally.
Yes, equal classics.
The Author Immortal, number two from Image Comics, written by Frank J. Barbier, art by Morgan Beam. If you didn't listen to our interview with Frank Barbier from last week's live show, where we talked about this issue and the series as a whole, this focuses on a author who has been hired by a J.K. Rowling type to take over a fantasy series that she can ghostwrite because she's been canceled. But there's some supernatural stuff going on at the same time, and he's been sucked into the world of the book. That's what we explore more in this issue. Justin, I know you were pretty stoked about this, so what did you think about issue number two?
Yeah, Justin.
Big fan. Really love this book. This is where our father and child characters get split up, and they're just sort of discovering the situation they're in. There's a lot of moments of like excitement, figuring it out, dread. The monsters are real, but our heroes have some ways to fight back. Like, I'm just super into this premise, the larger sort of commentary, like we talked about with Frank on last week's live show, of J.K. Rowling, the Harry Potter of it all, the meta-textual story, the deeper history that this world is going to unfold in front of us. Like, it's just a great... it's only two issues in, but I'm already really engaged with the mythology here.
Yeah, I agree. This is really awesome. There's that kind of moment of like these two characters finally get to talk and then the ground opens up and swallows one of them. And you're like, ah, classic, you know, just when you finally think something. Yeah. It's tough when you finally get a chance to talk to somebody at the party and then the ground opens up and swallows them. And you're like, oh, man, timing is just so
you can't reach
off
the guac, so you end up getting your chip in the hummus.
Yeah.
I'm getting dragged to hell with hummus on a chip.
Oh,
I'm already in hell.
But, this is a blast. The art's fantastic. There's a lot going on here, which is enjoyable.
Next up, Eddie Brock Carnage, number 10 from Marvel, written by Charles Soule, art by Jesus Saiz. The final issue of this title that has found Eddie Brock bonded with the Carnage symbiote. They're going up against Muse here, and we get a little bit of a twist at the end, a surprising moment that is going to lead into a crossover between Carnage, Venom, and Spider-Man that's going to kick off next year. We missed the past issue of this book, but what did you guys think about the finale here?
Justin?
Okay. I'm getting a lot of hype in this episode of the Stack. It was really first guy. I'm sad to see this go. I like this dynamic. I think Charles is just really smart with the way he writes scenes, just like purely plots the book. Like the Muse stuff at the beginning of this issue, I thought was really well done. There's the paneling where Muse gets his hand cut off, I thought was really cool and well played. It ends a little abruptly because of obviously the circumstances, but I do like there's sort of a dread moment here. So I thought that really worked as well.
Yeah, this was great. Fun with Muse. Interesting. Like I was kind of like, my mind was like racing with this idea of like, oh my God, if Muse and Carnage fuse, what would that look like? Because Muse already looks so cool. Like it would be interesting.
A Muse fuse,
yeah, with Carnage. So so I just felt like the fact that Muse is like, no, I work alone, I was kind of like, oh, man, that would have been interesting to see. But I also thought it was kind of cool and made sense with the story. I very much enjoyed this run. And, it's got great art and Charles Toll at the helm. So, what's not to like?
Yeah, I'll miss this as well. Just really small, smart, strong concept, really well played throughout. Too bad that it got canceled, but excited to see how this works into the crossover. Mm-hmm. Speaking of crossovers, Batman Static Beyond, number one from DC Comics, written by Evan Narcisse, art by Nicholas Draper Ivy. This takes place in the Batman Beyond era, so we're getting a much older and much more experienced Static as the Justice League waits to join a interstellar council, but things go terribly wrong on Earth, and it's up to Batman and Static to potentially save the day. I thought this was great. This is everything that you'd want from a crossover like this. I was really surprised. These two characters haven't crossed over before, frankly, and it's really interesting seeing an older Static come into play.
Yeah.
I like this.
I agree. Like, but I want Pete to talk first.
I agree. This was really cool, artistically driven, which is great. Love the way Static was drawn for sure. I think that this is an interesting team up. This was a cool choice that the art kind of really set this nice tone of. And who the Sprock are you? Some fun kind of dialogue for the time.
Rolls right
there
off your tongue, Pete.
Yeah, and then, that fun Melvin stuff. So, great art. Love the pace and all the action. This was fun.
Yeah, the art is really cool. It's really slick. It both serves the static side with all the like golds and yellows and the lightning of it all. But then Batman Beyond looks straight out of the cartoon as well.
Sure does.
So like, it's really cool to be able to find that middle ground. And like you're saying, Alex, I love the combo of these guys. I love an older static. I love Batman Beyond out here talking about Batman is the old man. All the favorites are back, and it's a good synergistic crossover.
We're taking everyone down with us. Number 6 from Image Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg, art by Michelle Landini. This is the final issue of this series about a young girl who is trying to get revenge for her father, who is a Bond style supervillain, against the Bond style hero who she thinks took him down. In addition, there is a robot who seemingly has the brain of her father in it, who has been tagging along the entire time. Some big stuff goes down here, some big violence, and big spoiler, this is actually not the end of it, because they're going to be doing a spinoff series coming up, which is very fun.
That's exciting.
And yeah, I love this series. There were twists and turns right up until the end. Fantastic art, of course, from Michelle Landini. And Matthew Rosenberg just like writes probably the best comedy action, or one of the best comedy action writers. There's a thing where she just slips and rips a guy's groin off and it's horrible. And then they revisit later on and they're like, well, sir, he got his dick ripped off.
Yeah. And they're like, what happened to him? We needed him. He's like, he got his dick ripped off and then was stood up and said, where's my dick or something. It's like, I bet that is what happened.
Oh, my God.
So great stuff. Laugh out loud, funny, but really emotionally felt at the same time. Great book.
Now, let me ask you guys, as fathers, would you put your, you know, consciousness in robots to help, you know, your kids after you're gone? Or how are you feeling about that?
I would go with Haunted Doll.
Oh, classic. Zelvatron?
I just want them to, like, plate me in gold and put a statue there, but my body is inside, so they know it's not just a statue, it's
a real statue.
Oh, real
statue. So you're going to decompose inside?
Oh, like not in gold. Not in gold. So I don't think that happens. How would the air get through gold?
So you're saying you get encased in gold and you're a perfectly preserved little flower in there?
Yep.
I think you stink. I think you stink in that gold.
Stinky gold?
I think it's a problem. I think that statue is going outside.
So. I'm sorry I asked.
What about the large lady who was in the Statue of Liberty? She rotted away because there was copper and there were holes. But I'm saying like perfectly plated in gold.
Oh, nice. Yeah, get a really, like dipped in gold?
Dipped.
You want to be dipped?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, if they could do me like head first or something like that, that's fine. And then flip me over so I look like an Oscar.
It was crazy. Yeah, you have always wanted to. If you can't get an Oscar, at least die as an Oscar. That was crazy back in like the mid-19th century when they took out all the bones from the Statue of Liberty, the big bone from the lady.
Yeah.
Lady Liberty.
I believe it was Fiorello LaGuardia who said, time to debone that statue.
And now that's what Staten Island, though, a lot of people live inside the bones, like a Flintstone type situation.
Really but good. If we can move this back to this comic, this is great. Also, like you said, the sense of humor really rocks. Having the art, kind of like that one villain who looks like a Burt Reynolds kind of knockoff bad guy, who's really just fun.
The James Bond character being like a shitty 70s Burt Reynolds is so funny. And that's so the spin-off we're getting, I think, is going to be focused on him. It's such a great source of comedy. And I do love the action as well, is like really intense, which, you know, there's a tendency I feel like to be like, I'm doing a comedy book, so the action has to be like goofy. But like, I love the pairing of like legit action, some pretty hardcore villainy and violence. Really matches well with the
comedy. Yeah, I think they did such a great job of matching the art and the tone and the humor and everything. They create such a cool and interesting world that really speaks for the fact that we can pull a spinoff and stuff like that, because everything's so cool and interesting. They can just pick other characters to kind of explore. So real impressively done.
And to answer your question one more time, Pete, I've been threading secret parenting messages in Comic Book Club for like almost 20 years. So
wow.
I don't think I need to be a robot. I can just have my kids really painstakingly watch all of these episodes to get everything they need.
Yes.
Wow. That's
and impressive. Most importantly, time to go to bed, kids.
Yeah.
All right. Next up,
beneath, gold.
The, Beneath the Trees, Where Nobody Sees, Rite of Spring, number 4 from IDW, written and drawn by Patrick Horvath. And this issue, Samantha Strong, our serial killer bear, is encouraging her new duck friend to do some dastardly deeds. Meanwhile, a lot of folks in town going through a lot of different stuff. I am very curious to see where this goes, because there are a lot of balls in the air in this series, a lot more so than the first series.
Well, and is Sam going to win again? Like, can she come out as a just continually successful serial killer? Because we are right there alongside, sort of like a very, very good version of being with Batman when he's doing fucked up stuff, is like, we're here with this killer and we are implicit. We're part of it. We're watching the web being woven here. And it's just so good. I said this on the live show, but like, this is a comic you can hand to your friend that likes murder podcasts and TV shows, but doesn't read comics, and be like, this is just as good as any of that you can see on TV. It's just excellent.
Pete?
He's not frozen. He's scared.
Every issue I try and I can't, because this is too dark. It's too, like, they showed these toys that I remember from my childhood, and it sets such a fucking creepy tone. And then just like, I feel like I'm being inundated with horrible images. It's like these sweet looking characters and the sweet coloring and tone, and then it cuts to like the grossest panel of someone hanging upside down with their throat slit, and you're just like, Jesus Christ, this is just, it's too dark, it's too fucked up. If a friend of mine handed me this book, I would be like, are you secretly a murderer and trying to tell me that like this is cool?
It's a confession.
Like, yeah, no, dude, this is like, I guess it's weird that you guys like it, but I can't with this book. This is too fucked up, man. This is too fucked up.
Are you legitimately worried about us for loving this book so much?
Yes.
That's the best review of this book you could possibly get. concern for my friends, says Pete LePage.
That is quite the revelation. So it is time to turn to the age of revelation.
Yeah.
We've got three titles to talk about this week. So why don't we kick it off talking about Iron and Frost number 2 from Marvel, written by Kevin Scott, art by Rary Coleman. This is focusing on White Queen, who has no heart, and Iron Man, who's turned into a Tin Man called the Iron King. Lots of stuff going on. Take it away, Justin.
Wait. I just wanted to tee this up a little bit and just say that, like, when I saw this comic in the stack, I thought to myself, oh, man, this is like Justin's dream come true. Mm. They took a ship and they said, let's make a comic out of it, call it Iron and Frost. And JT says, this seems like this was catered to you. Were you excited when you saw this? Like, walk me through a little bit before you read it. Like, what were you going through?
Well, this is the second issue I just want to mention, but go ahead.
Sure.
Yes, but I was excited. I love the relationship that was happening in the sort of end of the Krakoan era between
Queen, you thought these two were a great ship.
I love it. And it ended pretty completely in the main continuity. So the fact that it's coming back here a little bit, I was like, very cool. However, like, it's not being played for the fun or romance of it. It's sort of like we're getting into some of that storybook analogy that Alex was saying, but it just is going too hard on that. Like, maybe the next issue, which the cover of which looks dope. And I like the moves of them being in very different places. She doesn't have a heart. He makes hearts, but he's currently heartless because of the virus has affected him in that way. So the ideas are good. I just want a little bit more of the magic.
So you're saying there's hope. You feel like, you know, they're going to get there. They're purposely kind of starting them far away and then going to work them. Okay. Well, that
gives you hope.
Yeah, because I read this and was like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is the opposite of what I thought was going to be going down here. Like, these are two characters that work together somehow, and I was kind of impressed with. But then, you know, it was like at the start of this, they were just kind of like, let's push them as far away as possible, which I was reading it being like, well, there's no shot. And then, but hearing you talk about gives me hope.
I definitely think we're going to get their next issue. It's just these first two issues, it's like War Machine's kid and all this other stuff. I'm like, I wish the story was just more dialed in on them.
This is messy. Frankly, this is messy. The story is all over the place, like you're saying. I actually do think it started well in the first issue, and now it's getting convoluted with a lot of different plot stuff that is hard to follow because it's based in continuity things that we haven't really even been told or explored fully yet.
Yeah,
because we're barely into this. And I think we talked about this a little last week, but I feel like this event is starting to run into a problem where you get to the second issue of some of these things and they're like, to be concluded. I'm like, you have barely started whatever the story is.
There's like, too much pipe to lay, as they say, with like, so here's their corner of the universe where like there's all this stuff happening. And then we just get to the characters and they're like, okay, wrap it up. We got to get back to the main story, which is, as we know, confusing.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, there you go. Speaking of which, Sinister Six, number two for Marvel, written by David Marquez, art by Rafael Lurero. This is focusing on a team led by Mr. Sinister, who is trying to do some stuff. Last issue, he's trying to get Venom. This issue, he's trying to do something else. And in the midst of it, Havoc has crystals in his chest and a son with Lorda. I will say, I know I'm sounding very negative here. I will say that, like, I actually like this issue better than the last issue.
Yeah.
Because I think it started to dial in on some emotional stuff. But again, it ran into this wall of to be concluded next issue where it felt like this was just getting started with whatever it was saying. And I think the issue here is some people seem to be approaching this like piloting something, but as far as we know, unless they're going to be like Age of Revelation continues, isn't that great? Which doesn't seem like it's going to happen necessarily.
No,
these are just three issues of the first three issues of a comic book that we're never going to see again, you know?
Well, but I do think this one's actually doing a better job of telling a compact story. It feels like this team of people who don't want to be working for Sinister and bad things are going to happen to them. I think the story is going to end up being Alex, who lost Lorna, is trying to get his son out. And if I can make a prediction, I think his son is inside the Venom suit. He's kept his son locked up to be sealed away from the virus. I feel like this kid's going to be inside Venom and that's the way that they're going to get out and sort of go somewhere else. And the symbiote's keeping him safe is my prediction. But I like that as an emotional core. And then everyone else are sort of red shirts who are going to go down in this quest. We get sort of the four horsemen show up here, which I thought was, at least they're using the bigger pieces here.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. Dads, don't leave your sons inside of Venom. You know what I mean? Like just, you know, if they want to play inside Venom for a little while, that's fine. But don't leave them in there, you know, because that's where
like
the real
McDonald's
damage
play plays. It's, you know, you can only stay for so long.
Yeah, yeah. And then it starts to smell and get real weird. Fun cover. I thought it was kind of hilarious how Havoc was having this kind of touching moment with his son or whatever. And Venom's just kind of in the corner listening. I'm like, well, that's kind of a mood ruiner, but all right. Also, it was kind of weird how the last panel was like, oh, man, guess who's going to show up? Yeah, Revelation might actually say something. I was like, oh, great. We can finally hear from this guy and maybe like get some perspective on what his whole deal is. Also I'm fun.
Hear from a person named Revelation.
Yeah. And then also fun little kind of panel where Wolverine was stabbing a version of Sabretooth right in his head.
And last of the revelations this week, Rogue Storm, number two for Marvel, written by Merwa Ayodele, art by Roland Posky. This is focusing on 5 years into the Age of Revelation. Something went on with Rogue Red, who is a split-up version of Rogue, who is trying to attack Storm for reasons that we find out this issue. Meanwhile, Storm in the Age of Revelation, which is 5 years on from that, is being tracked down this issue by Gambit. We get some big, wild revelations there, no pun intended.
Yeah.
But this is great because...
Yes!
Merway Unale knows how to structure a three-issue story that stands to the side of this thing, is telling a clear emotional story about Storm and the Rogue Red character. I thought this was phenomenal.
Yes, agreed. This was just so fantastic, artistically amazing. Some of these panels I would love to kind of blow up as a poster and have on my wall because, like, just beautiful. Yeah. The Brass Knuckles panel, I mean, just... What a movie poster that would be. Yeah, love the slow start also. No words, just all beautiful art. Amazing. She gets crazy in this issue. You're chopping people's heads off. Riding giant birds with glowing axes. Like, this is some fucking fantastic, badass level shit right here. I was having a blast with this. More of this, please. Don't make this end. This is great.
If there's any writer prepped to dive into a sort of unexplored wild world like the Age of Revelation, it's Murray Yodelay, because that's what is happening in the Mainstorm book. Like, there's just so much wild shit happening that it's sort of seamless jumping in here and finding the emotional beats, embracing the weirdness, and just telling a great action-packed story. This continues to be one of the best books on the stand.
Next up, Poison Ivy, 2025 annual number one from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Mark Buckingham.
Mother
Bucker, dude, sick cover, by the way. Come on.
Ivy wants some information about the Green and everything that's been going on with her, so she goes to an ancient tree that tells her a riff on the story of King Arthur and the Lady of the Lake. And... Man, I'll tell you what, G. Willow Wilson diving into that fables style because of Mark Buckingham. Like, I feel like she even sort of twisted her writing style a little bit to lean into that because this feels like a lost issue of Fables. Poison Ivy, always great. Mark Buckingham, always great.
I will not, sir. I'm excited about this comic, and I will not shush for you. All right? This is glorious.
You're just growling like one of your outside animal friends. That's all. You're just like...
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, I thought this was good. Go ahead. Bark it out.
Go ahead, dog pound.
Yeah, I also thought this was great. Love the art style. Love the story. Just great start. This flashback was just fantastic. Ivy ain't gonna give up. I love it. She's gonna keep fighting.
We've slipped into Zookru mode, you know, and we're not even near the end of the stack yet. A little dangerous timing wise.
Dingo and the baby.
I thought this was one of my favorite reads of the
week. I'm sorry. Is baby an actual baby in this scenario? Like, it's a guy named Dingo who's like the wild one on the radio, and it's also a baby you were hosting.
Like, now let's get traffic.
Go ahead, Justin.
One of my favorite reads of the week. This was excellent. The twist on the Arthurian legend. Run through the Poison Ivy and the Green, I thought was really smart. And taking the themes from the larger Poison Ivy book of like humans versus nature and how Poison Ivy was like at first trying to kill humans and now since sort of trying to find a compromise, really. And the end of this issue is sort of ends on such a hopeful note for that mission, which is, again, such a departure. I feel like you talked about great runs when you were talking about Batman Dark Patterns, Alex, but I feel like this is like the run. This is the ultimate Poison Ivy story from beginning to end.
Yes.
For many years now. And I feel like this was maybe like a 6-issue limited series or 8 back in the day. And now it's become one of the best series on the stands, I feel like.
Yeah. Speaking of one of the best series on the stands, it has returned with Die Loaded, number one from Image Comics, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Stephanie Hans. This takes place following a group of friends who were sucked into a killer not D&D game, but RPG back in the day. Then they got sucked in again as adults. Now we're about a year or two on from there, and it's happening again.
Oh, man.
Justin, I know you were pretty stoked about this.
Yeah, did Justin.
Roll a D perfect 20 or snake eyes?
I once rolled a regular die and got sucked into a casino.
I once rolled a regular die and got sucked into a back alley craps game.
Yes.
Or got shanked three times.
Oh, man.
Well, you can't lose that bad. Yep. You don't know how to play dice.
How
back alley or otherwise.
I just barged in and they stabbed me. It wasn't so much playing as they stabbed. I got stabbed in an alley.
No.
Yeah. the rolling the dice thing was sort of a side. It wasn't really part of it. But this is really good. I mean, this story in the first series was very complicated and convoluted, like a big epic RPG game. And this is proving to probably be similar, which is textbook Kieran Gillen. But I like you use the words twists and turns a lot. We do when we're reviewing comics. This one has some real twists and turns and surprises that I didn't expect and puts us in a place where I really don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, this is awesome. Really cool cover. I'm happy that this is back. It's such a great team. The art's unbelievable. It really takes you to this kind of magical world. This is awesome. That being said, I feel like their friends need to have the old Jumanji sket from SNL conversation where it's like, listen, you can't Jumanji me anymore. You can't keep sucking me back into this game. Enough is enough. Stop going back. This is insane. Like, you would think after friends survived an ordeal like that, they would kind of make a pact that's like, hey, let's all agree never to go back again. But man alive, I mean, three times getting sucked back in. I mean, that's just
Jumanji's
horrible.
Really
friends.
Fun. It's a really fun game.
Yeah. It's happened to The Rock at least twice, and I believe a third time as well. So
I think that's what the smashing machine is about.
That was the third Jumanji movie.
I believe. I'm pretty sure.
Anyway, this is a great jumping on point. Actually, it does a good job of getting you up to speed with everything that's happened in Die so far. I agree with Justin. I'm worried about it getting overly complicated very soon. But if you want to find out what this is about, pick up this issue. Next up, American Caper, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Dan Houser and Laszlo, art by David Lapham. Now, Dan Houser is either the co-creator or the creator of Grand Theft Auto, and this is his first comics work set on a small town. We're focusing on a guy who is very down on his luck, really doesn't like his wife, who's gotten very into online conspiracy theories. He has a Mormon neighbor who has some secrets going on as well. What do you guys think about this kickoff issue?
Some dark twists at the end there, some great art, interesting story, kind of the tale of two kind of towns a little bit, two twisted dads, and one seems to maybe be trying to do his best while the other is just evil as fuck and looking for reasons to kill people. So interesting. We'll see what happens.
I thought the art was great. I love the faces, and the horror is really sort of very directly rendered, sort of coming at you. And then I like the story as well. I mean, it doesn't feel like when I heard about the Grand Theft Auto Connect, I was like, oh, what's this going to be? And it doesn't feel like that at all. It feels like a legitimate story, and I would keep picking this up.
Next up, Fantastic Four, number five from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Umberto Ramos.
Yes.
This is a issue focusing on Invisible Woman teaming up with Black Cat against her will, because Black Cat has been framed for a murder and theft that she claims she didn't do. Classic Dunn and One story. It's interesting that they aren't dealing with the fact that Valeria was decapitated by Dr. Doom, which happened back in One World Under Doom, but that's sort of like, I feel like, the underlying thing that we're doing.
Yeah,
just doesn't. You can tell they're like feeling it, even if they're not saying it.
Yeah, I gotta go. have a fun romp, go dancing, and I got to go back and talk about my decapitated daughter.
Hey, Justin, you know, I thought of you reading this. You love the Black Cat. How did you feel about this?
I thought this was great. I mean, Ryan North is just great at Dunne and Ones. It feels light. Mm-hmm. It feels fun. I was trying to crack the mystery before the end of it, and I thought it was going to be a Hydro Man through the toilet situation. That was not to be.
The old Hydro Man in the toilet situation.
That guy's got to be popping up out of toilets all the time.
He's a real Ghoulies, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
He's upper decking himself.
Oh, boy. Yeah, cool cover. This is fun. I like to see this team up. Great art, fun whodunit. And the great news is Sue figured it out. This is a tight package. Ramos's art just makes me happy. It's just got such a vibe to it that I enjoy. So it's kind of great to be back in his world.
Yeah, this is great. Like you said, Humberto Ramos's art is just really fantastic. Like, I feel like he's stepped up a level in terms of clarity and a vision here. So this is really nice to see. And I'm really looking forward to this tone continuing. I hope once they deal with Valeria being decapitated by Dr. Doom, we get another fun romp like this, you know?
Yeah,
just like
exactly.
A really done in one science mystery. Like, really oops, hanging on your head back up.
Oops, I lost my
on
head.
The edge. Yeah. Hanging on the edge of this one world under Doom conclusion.
Yep. Oops, I crapped my
it's
pants.
It's just weird that they're not following up on it anyway. All right.
Are you sure it's not one wordle under Doom? Because that sort of feels like what the stakes are.
Yeah. Superman, the Kryptonite Spectrum, number 4 from DC Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martine Morazzo. We found out the last issue that one of the spectrums of Kryptonite that was sent towards Superman was not Kryptonite at all, but actually a call into the fifth dimension. So in this issue, we have Superman lost in the fifth dimension, trying to find his own fifth dimensional imp while Batman helps him along. Pete, you love this one.
Oh, man, did I. The art on this is super tight bananas. This is just unbelievable. I mean, the panels of, like, Superman, like, tripping his face off with the rainbow eyeballs, it's just unbelievable. Just so much fun, so cool looking. Dr. Fate here to help. This is just an absolute blast and a half. Delightfully twisted. So unique and cool. You know, it's just interesting that, like, something can look so different from the normal Superman that we know and love, but also still feel like it. So, really impressive team on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's our Ice Cream Man gang. It's really funny. It's you never see a Superman story like this. With a lot of the detail work, but we're still getting, like, a big confrontation at the end of this leading into the final issue coming out next. Just one of the more unique books out right now. Really like
it. Yeah, it's awesome.
And I'm curious, this is showing our hands a little bit, but we read this digitally. I'm really curious to pick this up physically because I have to imagine they did something to the pages that's different that we're not getting there, but I don't know. Mm. Whatever it is, there's a lot of format playing that's going on in this issue that's very, very fun. Red Coat, number 15 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Brian Hitch. Big twist of this issue as we jump to a time when Simon Pure is pretending to be Simon Plum, a regular guy with a family. And we get two big returns in this issue. Justin, I know you were very high on this one.
Yeah, Justin.
I just like this comic. You know, it feels so effortlessly made from Jeff Johns and Brian Hitch. The character, I really like Red Coat. I'm charmed by him. We get the future confrontation between turncoats, coat on coat action.
Wow.
The all coat fight. But like the Simon sort of going straight, having a family, not being a rogue anymore is a great little turn and really sweet.
Yeah, I keep being impressed by this comic. It's really been artistically and writing wise impressive for 15 issues. This is such a kind of touching issue, a nice family issue. A great call to action at the end. I'm just super impressed by this comic that constantly surprises and delights me. What a great combination of art and writing in this.
And it addresses one of the biggest questions. Can he take off the coat? And the answer is he can.
So there he's just white shirt in this, really.
Yeah. Strange Tales, number two for Marvel, written by Jeremy Whitley, art by Bailey Underwood. We got a team-up last issue between Nico Minoru and Scarlet Witch, which we loop back to eventually, but most of the issue is Spider-Gwen fighting Green Goblin in the Sanctum Sanctorium. This book is somewhat inspired by D&D campaigns as well, so they're building up their party in different ways. We really like the first issue of this one. I will say for myself, I really like this one as well. I like these fun mashups between characters that you wouldn't expect coming together. There's a fun little sequence towards the end where Gwen has been turned into an invisible prism and she needs to somehow tell them about it. This is fun. This is light. I'm having a good time.
Yeah, I agree. This is a blast. Oh, Justin, didn't mean to cut you off there.
I was going to say, eat your vegetables. And this comic in general is also very good. It lives up to its name, Strange Tales, because it's a strange combination of characters. The story feels like Green Goblin breaking into the Sanctum Sanctorum. He really fools Doctor Strange. He gets it. And I thought that was great. Not expected. The combo of characters is not expected. Good, really good.
Yeah, I thought this was a great use of Strange Tales for these stories here. And if you're still missing Halloween, this is a great issue for you here. This is fun, amazing art. Love the colors. Love the kind of the style choices that they made. Has heart and joy. Great ish.
And you're used to the Strange Tales on the mice that pull up your pants in the morning, right, Pete?
That's right. You got to train them.
Yeah. What do they have? They have, like, curly little tails?
Yeah, that's right. But when they eat the cheese, it straightens out for a couple of seconds.
Because they're so happy.
Yeah. Oh, that's adorable.
You've seen Pinky in the Brain, right?
I have several times.
Yeah.
Gargoyles X Fantastic Four, number one. See, there I go, pronouncing the X again, from Dynamite, written by Greg Weisman, art by George Kambadias. The second part of the crossover Fantastic Four X Gargoyles that was at Marvel. It's the two teams together fighting a bunch of stuff. There you go.
You got it. Justin, you want to add anything, or you just pretty much nail it there?
I love the gargoyles. I love to see them in any capacity. This comic does a lot of, like, laying out all the characters and all the stuff they have going on. When we talked to Greg Weisman many months ago at this point, he was like, it's all one story. And I was like, it definitely feels that way. It feels like these characters are sort of just continuing on in their grand adventure. And that.
Yeah, I think this is great. Cool cover. Fun team up. Two great teams working great together. This is just very enjoyable. I thought this was fun. More of this, please. Thank you.
All right. Godzilla Escape the Dead Zone, number four from IDW, written by Ethan Parker and Griffin Sheridan, art by Pablo Tunica. We are following a group of adventurers, or at least like a half lizard man and two kids who can take over kaijus, who are traveling through the Dead Zone. In this issue, they encounter a gigantic girl who is in love with Godzilla. Very fun concept that they play with nicely. I'm excited to see where this new group goes going forward.
Yeah, agreed. This is fun. Love the giant kid. Kind of fun that, her crying creates rivers and stuff like that. Love the art and the style of it. It's got a lightness and just makes it kind of fun and enjoyable. I enjoyed this.
Growing up is hard. I say that about this comic and in general. This is something that, however you grow up, it's important to, really deal with all the things in your life.
How tall you are.
No matter how tall you are, exactly. Well, you might be a short king or queen, especially if you're in my family. The thing that I like about this, I actually think this is my favorite of the Godzilla glut of comics. Ah, like, I think this
the new comic Godzilla
really done,
boom.
The Godzilla boom. This has done a good job of building out a universe and an area that has its own character. that everyone is reacting to, and it's willing to go into some weird places. So I'm into it.
Ultimate Wolverine, number 11 for Marvel, written by Chris Condon, art by Alessandro Capuccio. Wolverine is working with the opposition to the resistance to magic and Colossus, and no longer Omega Red, because I believe they killed Omega Red. But yep. In this issue, the Weapon X program, I believe it's still called the Weapon X program, whatever it is, the bad guys pull out a psychic bomb, which I believe is powered by Professor X's brain, that they're going to drop on them. And it ends in a really shocking moment. I got to say, like,
yes,
I like what Chris Condon has been doing with this title, but the thing that's been holding me back about it, that I think I've said a couple of times, is particularly in the last couple of issues, it's felt like, yeah, this is a Wolverine title. You know, he's teaming up with the X-Men, or they're fighting some bad guys, even if they're other X-Men. I get it. Like, there's some gross moments that happen throughout. But the thing that happens at the end here is the sort of thing you can only do with the Ultimate Universe and only do towards the end of the Ultimate Universe. And it is gutting.
Yes. So upsetting. Really well done. And I was like, oh, I did not, even though it was pretty well telegraphed, I still was very unsettled by it happening. So
yeah.
This book continues to surprise.
Yeah, it was really fucked up what happened. And, like, yeah, I get it. Like, the phone call with Wolverine and Creed was dragging on, but dropping a bomb on him, I was like, Jesus, it's just a long phone call. You know, it's not that brutal, but I get it. You know what I mean?
It's You're pretty tough. Short on the phone, right, Pete?
Yeah, always be short. You know what I mean?
ABS.
Leave wanting more. Yeah, you got to watch out for that irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah, I hang up in the middle of somebody else saying a sentence because they're like, yeah. Ooh,
what else? It's like when I went to the movies with P and he didn't sit next to me. And I was like, yep, keep it short. Keep our relationship short.
Just like Wolverine. Moving on, talking about Artificial number 3 from Image Comics, written and drawn by Maria Lovett. This is about a woman who has rented a sex cyborg. Sorry, sex android, excuse me. And forgot the safe word and forgot to turn it off. So now it's starting to stalk her. It is interesting to me that that is the concept of the book, and we're 3 issues in, and that still is only just starting to happen is surprising. Yeah. I would have loved a little bit more of that earlier on, particularly given next issue is the last issue. But Maria Lovett still draws some fun stuff and has some fun sci-fi ideas.
Well, and there's a pretty, like, scary situation that happens here. So, like, I think that's what it was building toward. I just didn't expect that to be the crux of the story. But I think it does work, and I liked this. I think playing with Maria Lovett's sort of reputation or oeuvre of, like, pretty sexual comics, this takes it in a totally different, scarier direction, which I thought was a good upsetting of expectations. So I this is intense, but I like it.
Amazing art.
Great. Peter Cannon, Thunderbolt, number 1 from Dynamite, written by Fred Van Lente, art by Jonathan Lau. This is about rebooting the titular character that, I'll be honest, I don't know much about. He seems to be super, super smart, be able to use all of his brain type guy. So he's great at fighting. He's great at wearing disguises and convincing people to do stuff, I guess. But part of the concept here was he was raised in a kung fu cult that is a little misunderstood. I'll say this was the biggest, most pleasant surprise of the week for me. Whoa. I don't know much about this character. I know I like Fred and I like the stuff he does, but this feels like the sort of clear, surprising concepts that he does on Valiant books, like particularly like the early Valiant books, where it's like, okay, I wasn't expecting that. I don't know anything about this. Let's go. Really excited to follow it going forward. Great cliffhanger here. And nice, clear art from Jonathan Lau.
Yeah.
I thought the art was excellent on this. I think it really makes for that James Bondy superhero character. Great fight sequences. And yeah, I was also like really into the story. I love the cult exploration that happens here. And there's a nice twist at the end. I really, yeah, similarly, I don't know much about the character, but I think this is just a great story forward way into the, I guess, IP character that we have here.
Yeah, I, just to echo everything you guys said, yeah, this is fun, action forward, which is great. Love the panel of the boot to the face. Yeah, I also enjoyed the twist at the end. This is in great hands, and excited to see kind of what goes down moving forward.
Venom 251 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Paco Medina. In this issue, Mary Jane and Venom are trying to figure out their new status quo, where she's working doing ads. They're being hunted in the city by Doc Ock, who now runs SCAR, the organization dedicated to taking down symbiotes. And it leads to a very silly, very fun new status quo for Venom by the end of the issue, as well as several other takes on the Venom costume throughout. Another just really fun issue of this title, I thought.
Yeah, I love this title. It's really fun and funny. Great to see Mary Jane just out there making a spot. They seem to have a nice long lunch break on set, which is really great. The one thing I had a question about here. Venom is tongue out a lot in this comic.
Yeah.
Like, don't you think that thing's going to dry out a little bit? How does a goop tongue work? Is it solid?
I have always wondered what Venom sounds like, because it's tongue out. That's probably how it talks most of the time, right?
That's interesting, because I was imagining the tongue, which gets, like I said, a lot of airtime here. And it reminds me of Jabba the Hutt's tail in Jedi, when Jabba's being strangled and the tail's like flapping on the barge. So I feel like Venom's tongue's got to be dry and sort of like,
I don't know. I feel like
it even tastes those brains.
Tongues out, fun's out. Like when Venom's rocking the tongues out, that means good stuff's going to go down. You know, it's like Michael Jordan with his tongue out. You know, shit's about to go down. So, I feel like MJ is more of a, you know, just a fan of the mouth open, you know, I guess. I'm this is growing on me more and more. In the beginning, I thought this was kind of a crazy, dumb thing. But
it's been 250 issues, Pete. I'm glad to hear you finally.
Having kind of MJ behind the helm here of Venom is enjoyable. So it's been slowly growing on me, like a small symbiote eating away at your soul.
It's nice. You love Paul if you love this comic. Great to hear you admit that.
No, I didn't say that at all.
Paul's a character in this. You know,
I'm aware.
A central character.
Yeah, the most important character.
I would say that. Nope. I don't know about that.
A great character who everybody loves now.
Nope.
And for those of you that don't know, whenever Pete's not talking, his tongue is dangling loose on this podcast, if you don't see it. He's like the Albert Einstein poster that hung in that annoying kid's dorm down the hall.
Colossal Kaya, number one from Image Comics, written by Wes Craig, art by James Harden, Mike Huddleston, Declan Shalvey, Nathan Fox, Ryan Stegman, and Jim Mahfood. This is all one story by Wes Craig, giving us an intro into the world of Kaya, who lives in an apocalyptic world where she's traversing the countryside for a mission. But we're getting a bunch of great artists on this issue as well for a jam-style-ish. Pete, you love a jam style ish, and you love jam, so go.
I do. This is worth it for the art alone. This is just so beautiful, so smart. I love the four kind of black panels that separate, like, okay, we're changing artists. Just so smart, so well done, so artistically leaning forward. This is just so cool. In such great hands. I thought this comic jumped off the page at me. Just so amazing. Love the last panel. This is a blast. This is a vibe. This is just, this gives me energy. I love this comic.
It's something that I haven't been reading lately. This was just a great way to dive back into it. Really, really good. We touch on so many different parts of the world over the course of this. And I hadn't seen anyone really do this as like a refresh on their ongoing. And I think it's just super smart.
Yeah.
Event Horizon Dark Descent, number 3 from IDW, written by Christian Ward, art by Tristan Jones. This is a official prequel to the movie showing what happened to the Event Horizon before the events of Event Horizon. And in this issue, we focus on one of the crew members who secretly has cancer. And just like on The Boys, it goes horribly out of control, but frankly, more horribly than The Boys, as he becomes a flesh ball. And it is gross. Period.
Yeah, this comic is pretty gross sort of across the board.
This comic was so scary that I had to just kind of question my life choices. The use of red in this is very impressive, but it is so fucking gross. And there are so many nightmare monsters in this thing that are going to fuck up my dreams for a long time. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I feel like we've gone down a path that maybe is too dark.
No, Pete. Well, here's the crazy thing, Pete. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, but it's actually just a really lighthearted rom-com that I would recommend you check out. I think you should watch this right before bedtime tonight.
Did you know it's called Event Horizon because it's about two lovers who really need to meet to see at the horizon, and they consider it an event. Yeah. And can they make it there? Like, you don't know if they're going to make it on time because one of them has a big dance. The other one has a report due at work.
Don't spoil it, Alex. Definitely watch this movie when he's at his most vulnerable.
Yeah. Drink a bunch of coffee so you can't go to sleep and watch it.
Yeah, it's great. And they eventually fall in love in the middle of a black hole, which is also the gateway to hell.
Paimon! Anyway, great images throughout here. This is messed up in exactly the right way. And I will say, every issue, I'm like, oh man, I should really watch Event Horizon again. So I haven't yet, but it's
so fucked up. That movie will stuck up your. It would honestly, if Pete watched it, I would worry about it. I think that would be a bad idea.
Don't have to worry about it.
Amazing Spider-Man Tour number 2 for Marvel, written once again by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Per Perez. This is taking place back in the day when Spider-Man is trying to choose between Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy. Meanwhile, there's a demon in town. Yes. Here's my thing. Is that like, same as with the first issue, the relationship stuff, I think, is actually great. Like, there's a really good scene here between Peter and Mary Jane.
That kiss?
It's very romantic.
The whole kiss, though?
Feels like he's not that torn, I gotta be honest with you. But
the torn part is not happening in this.
That's the thing. He's not torn, and I don't understand who this villain, who is a lady who bled on a book and turned into a demon lady, ties into whatever theme they're working with here. Maybe it'll come around, but it feels like that should be readily apparent to us, and it's not.
Yeah, I agree with you. The big, like, because I love the idea of the cliffhanger of, like, that time when he was still having feelings for Gwen, but had met Mary Jane. That's really cool. In this, though, Gwen's in it for 1 second where she's like, we're going to get some food. You guys want to come? And they're like, no. I'm like, okay, see ya. They are literally torn apart by making slightly different plans. But yeah, I like the Mary Jane stuff. It seems like JMS has had himself drawn into this comic as the occult guy.
Here's the other thing about this comic book that I wanted to mention. We talked last issue about how there was a Gwen Stacy page without her headband, and then they cut to a different blonde lady with a very similar haircut.
Yeah, that was weird.
And we were like, wait, is that Gwen Stacy? No, that's a different lady. This issue, there is a researcher guy who has a gray beard and gray hair, and then they have that next door to a scene with a guy with a gray beard and gray hair, except he's bald. And I was like, those guys look exactly the same, except one of them. It could be the same guy, and they seem to be holding the same position in the story. I don't know.
One of them talking to the demon lady and the other one's talking to Spider-Man. But I was like, make them the same person and they're talking at different times. Interesting, cool. Or make one of them, here, controversial take, a woman. So then you don't have
a different colored beard. I don't know, something like that. So they don't look like the same guy in two different places.
My understanding is beards only come in gray. Is that?
That's correct. That's correct.
That's true, right?
That's all true.
Alex, it is weird. We're going reverse. I have gray spots here right around my chin, and you have dark spots there.
I do. Well, no, I have Gray right here on the inside.
Yeah, we're
this
we're
is like great. Anyways,
meanwhile, Pete's turning it to Santa Claus.
Yeah, so I thought that Zalbin kind of did this as a little because it went from Event Horizon Dark Descent, which was the most fucked up comic, to then this, which I was like, oh, what a moment, what a kiss, what a ship to be on. If you're thinking about like, man, I'd like to be on the ship, I just don't know which one to hop on, join us on the ship. It's a glorious ship. These two go together like peanut butter and jelly. Great story, great arc. I needed this. This was a nice little break from the madness, so it was very enjoyable.
But you know that the reason, actually a lot of people don't know this, I guess, but like the reason they call them ships, that came from Event Horizon, the romantic comedy. Mm-hmm. Like, right. That is a ship in that movie.
It is spaceships, is the full
it's a spaceship.
Term.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so romantic,
don't ruin
people
this.
Called it ship for short.
Don't ruin this.
That's what it's short for, spaceship.
When you say don't ruin this, do you mean your life by having you watch the movie?
Too late.
Yeah.
Don't ruin this.
Come on, man. We only got one more. Let's go.
The Power Fantasy. No, you got to get out of here. The Power Fantasy number 13 from Image Comics, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Casper Wingard. We got to wrap this up because Pete has to watch Event Horizon tonight. In more big things going down in this issue, I think I said this with the last issue, but this book is like pedal to metal right now. Etienne, yes. Our psychic Professor X guy, was seemingly killed two issues back. He wasn't. We found out what was actually going on with him. This issue, some more stuff goes down. Like, versus what we're talking about with Die, where that title, like, got very much in its head. This is also like reading a game, but it's a chess game, but it's also a thrilling, exciting one. Like, the vibe, it's entirely different, but this reminds me of like reading Death Note, which most of Death Note, I don't know if you guys read it, but most of Death Note is just like one character trying to figure out what the other character is thinking. And it's just pages of him being like, well, if I do this, then he'll do this. And if he does this, then I do that. And it's just like back and forth, but you're like enthralled because you're like, you're right. Oh my God, what will happen? And the same thing is here because everybody has their own very clear, very specific motivations that are going on. They all are trying to jockey for position, but they know the second they make a move, there's going to be a counter move. And so by the point those moves happen, particularly in the last three or four issues, it's just thrilling because you're like, oh my God, they did it. What is going to happen next? And I'm on pins and needles wanting to know.
Yeah, it is amazing. The metaphor, the idea was like, no, the superheroes are a metaphor for nuclear proliferation and how like everyone actually holds each other in check. So it's like, oh, that's a cool idea. And then it's like, no, we're actually doing that. We're doing just that. They're literally holding each other in check verbally every issue, every scene, every panel in this. And like you're saying, when it pops off, it's really popping off.
Yeah, this just continues to be really impressive, not only artistically, but writing-wise. And more of this, please, and thank you.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub for ad-free versions of this podcast and all the rest of them. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
And Pete, what animal's dressing you tomorrow?